Good evening, one and all. Welcome along. It is season 5, episode 55 of the UK Dallas Cowboys podcast. And the dream team is reunited. Mike, we're back together.
Yay! Yeah, I do apologize for last week, but yeah, it was all going on last week, and
Yeah.
I was on call, so I ended up getting called away, and all went
Yeah.
from there.
Needs must, at the end of the day, this is not a job for us. This is our passion, our distraction from our work life. So
Yes.
it's definitely fun. But look, before we get into tonight, look, there's been a lot of news today in terms of new rules that are coming in. Anything that spiked your interest?
The well, I mean the hip drop tackle, I mean that was kind of like you just waiting for that, do you know what I mean? Yeah, so kind of like a no-brainer there. In terms of the kicking, the new kicking or the new kickoff rules, I quite like it. I mean, like it, so they had to do something because last year in 2023, and I you got to you kind of understand why they did it. That they, we've gone from the days of the flying wedge, which was just insane, to now it's gone the extreme the other way. We've gone to the other wing where they predicated so much on the kickoff for safety that in 2023 there was the fewest kickoff returns in NFL history. So they had to do something because, like, yes, you've got to be safe first, but at the same time, it needs to be entertaining and thrilling. And there is nothing more, there's nothing more entertaining or explosive than a kickoff return. Like those kickoff returns can completely change the fabric of a game, like instantly. Like one kickoff, it doesn't necessarily have to go for a touchdown. Touchdown for, obviously great, fantastic. But, you get one and you get outside the opposition's red zone. Instantly, when your team, when your offense starts there in the opposition's field, you've completely changed the fabric of the game. You changed everything. So they had to do something because it did. I don't want to say kill the game because it didn't kill the game. It just took away one part that is extremely thrilling and exciting. And they had to do something to find a way. So I mean, like this from the old XFL rules, it is a great way. It does work. I mean, like when you look at it, when you look at it from above, it looks odd. I had some friends ask me like how it looks. I had to draw it up, X's and O's on the field, and it does look weird when you line it up because your kicker is back at the 35, but the rest of his team are all down on the opposition's 40, and the receiving team are on the 30. So it does look very odd, but there are a lot of fun parts to it. That basically you can you are forcing them, you are forcing teams to have to return the ball because there's two things that you land it in what they call the landing zone, which is basically the red zone. You drop the ball in there, they have to return it. There is no choice. And it doesn't matter if the ball bounces in the landing zone and goes into the end zone. It's not, that's not a touchback. Now they've got to scoop that ball up and they've got to go. So and that just makes it a little bit more enticing. You're gonna see more drives starting back at the 20. You're gonna see that a lot more, which would be it'd be nice to see that. Sorry, let me turn this off. You'll see a lot. It's just constant messages, but you will see that happening. It will make it a bit more interesting. It'd be nice that, like I say, back, balls back of the 20. The ball dropping into the end zone, I believe they start now on the 35. And if the ball goes out of bounds, they start on the 40. So that it makes it a lot more. You have to be more precise with your kickoffs. You have to be more in there. They did try a few things these high lofted kickoffs to drop outside the end zone. But
yeah,
in the end, it just became too easy for the kickoff team to just boot it out of the end zone and just go right to start from there.
Yeah. I mean, this was the thing. I mean, how many times did Brandon Aubrey just bash it through the back of the end zone? Like, I think he had five kicks which didn't go straight through the back of the end zone all season. I think there was maybe one or two went out of bounds and one or two dropped short, but almost every one of them was through the back of the end zone.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, it just makes too much sense to do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why do anything different? And all right, you could be like, yeah, well, we could take our chance and drop it in short, and we'll give them a chance. Why? What's the point? Just kick it out the end zone, get your team out there, get rocking and rolling. There was no point in doing anything else, doing anything different, you know.
Our good friends up in Pennsylvania, once again, they're 4th and 20. / onside rule or onside kick rule was defeated. I mean, are they ever going to give up this notion?
Yeah, the two that are always going to be complicated to figure out is, you know, you've got that and you've got the fumble out of the end zone.
Yeah.
You know, like, are they going to ever figure that out?
I find it hard to believe that they can't figure it out at this point in time. You know, how can someone fumble out of bounds, but then fumble through the end zone when it goes out of bounds? It just doesn't make sense in any way, shape, or form to me.
But you're rewarding so what I don't get with that rule is that you reward the defending team for it happening when effectively they aren't doing anything. And like, so you've already punished the offense because they fumbled the ball before they got into the end zone. That's punishment enough. But then you turn around and go, okay, but because it went out over there on that line, we've got to give the ball to them. And you just kind of, and that could be like, you know, it could be like first and goal when that happens. Yeah. And you just kind of like, what?
Yeah,
you know, this doesn't make any sense. That rule, to me, is one of the worst rules in all of professional sports.
Yeah, I mean, like there's two kinds of thoughts on this. I mean, if you go back and look, you know where I'm going to go with this. If you go back and look at the play Jeff Heath made against the Raiders, what was it, 5-6 years ago?
Yeah.
And he actually deflected the ball out of Carr's hands through the back of the end zone. I mean, that rewarded the Dallas Cowboys, but I mean, it was a defensive play. Whereas, as you say, a guy fumbles it through the end zone from no contact. That just seems an unfair punishment.
Yeah. There needs to be a better idea there of what to do with the ball. Even if you want to punish the offense in another way, fine. Yeah. But I don't think that giving the ball over to them, you know, to the opposition is fair, is just.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So I'm just seeing a message in here from one of our co-hosts, Paul, and he's saying, according to Mike Crum of the Cowboys Wire, Dak's deal will happen later, likely post-June, as it makes more impact in increasing cap space for future years. I'm not sure about that. I mean, if they do the deal now, you can restructure this year and next year. So that seems a little bit off for me. Is that the same read for you, Mike?
I just don't get why you would wait. Like, okay, so you haven't made any free agent moves. Mm. You're still waiting for them to. The team is getting worse. The one way you can free up a shed load of cap this year to be able to start making some moves is to fiddle around with Dak's contract and get into negotiations and get that sorted. But they haven't even tried. As far as what's been reported, nobody's talked to anybody. So there's like zilch there. And I mean, me and Paul talked about this last week.
Yeah.
calling it early and saying, like, are we on the cusp of a rebuild? And it's like, at the moment, everything looks that way. And then you see this news about Dak and you go, oh, there's another tick in the rebuild box.
Mm. Yeah.
That's how I look at it.
Yeah, which is fair. And look, let's not go into too much detail on that. I mean, you guys have done a podcast there. It is available for folks if you want to go and see. That was on your blog and the boys channel, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, make sure and go and check that out. Give the guys a follow on their Instagram and the Twitter handle and all of that stuff as well. And you guys are doing that on a Saturday now, aren't you?
Yeah, that goes out on a Saturday. Yeah. I think like daytime at some point it goes out.
Yeah. So definitely give the guys a follow. But look, Mike, we're here, as we say, Tuesday nights is generally it's Project Prospect. We like to talk and, you know, in the old Brian Broaddus words, investigate and educate the people on some people to look out for in this draft class. Mm-hmm. We're going to look at interior offensive linemen tonight. And again, you've kind of covered a lot of these on your own handle, your Twitter handle, in terms of good, bad, rating the prospects. So, you know, anyone who hasn't seen that, make sure and check out Mike's socials for that or the Blog and the Boys socials. But look, the very obvious place to start, and I know Paul and yourself did a mock draft over the weekend, and that mock draft had Jackson Powers Johnson coming to the Dallas Cowboys.
Yes. So that was on Paul's mock.
It was. But look, if you want to give us a bit of a rundown on Jackson Powers Johnson, I mean, he's pretty much the de facto number one ranked interior offensive lineman.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, like, it's the power. It's just that he just takes up a lot of space, first of all. Big wingspan, very wide stance. So he takes up a lot of space just naturally on his own. He's just a very powerful guy. In terms of centers, I would go as far to say, watching him, he's one of the best centers I've seen easily in the last half decade. And that's talking about some of, when you think of the names of some of the top centers that come for the draft in that time, like, he is far and above those guys. Like, he's not a big finisher. There are guys in this draft who are better at finishing on the play, but naturally, as he is the best. He is the most powerful. And I mean, like, you know, he was All American, you know, Pac-12 first team, and he's just it the pass blocking, fantastic. The run blocking is not bad; it's pretty good. The big one, though, of course, is discipline. So he does give up a lot of flags. And I think that's mostly down to that he gets outside guys' frame. Yeah. And when they do that, and he's not necessarily holding. It seems to be like an odd technique he has.
Yeah.
And because of that, instantly refs just see it and just call it. And they go, yep, there we go. But he is really good. In terms of the run game, although his pass blocking is better than his run blocking, the run blocking is, you need that nasty demeanor. He does have that. He is very, very good. Getting into the second level on blocks, he'll do that as well. Very good at doing that. But, like I say, I mean, you know, so the combo blocks, fantastic. Reach blocks. They're fine. In terms, though, of any defender, even in the NFL right now, that thinks they're going to bull rush this guy, just forget it. They're not going to bull rush Jackson Powers. You need to beat him with counter moves and getting around him in a very sneaky way. You've seen it. You see it in college. There's guys who there are pass rushers in this year's draft that went up against Jackson Powers Johnson, who are the finesse type pass rushers, and did get around him. So you do see that. But I mean, apart from that, I quite like him. I mean, give me your take on him. I'd like to know, because I think he's a fantastic guy. And the size, I've forgot to mention as well. You know, like he's just over 320 odd pound, and like, you know, for a center with that type of mobility, it's rare to see.
Yeah. Now, before we go much further, and look, as we always say, we love people commenting. We keep the comments in. If we don't pull them up straight away, there's a reason we're doing that, and we will try and get back to them. But Paul Stewart, you and I are going to have a falling out, my friend. He's easily better than Tyler Linderbaum. How very dare you, sir? But Mike, take it on that point. I mean, you guys know how much I was in love with Tyler Linderbaum 2 years ago.
Yeah, I'd say I'm not going to disagree with Paul on that.
Oh,
yeah,
that's a very interesting take.
Seriously,
you think he's a better center prospect coming out?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, but based on just his physical size, you know, the knock against Tyler Linderbaum was always his arm length, his reach. You know, I'm not saying that Jackson Power is the same, but his going for him is his size. You're not going to forklift this guy. You're going to move him. He's going to anchor down, and he's going to be hard to move. With Tyler Linderbaum, because of the arm length, it meant that there was a lot of different types of defenders that could get leverage on him because they could get the strike in early. So that was so to me, Jackson Powers, like, there's a few issues that need to be brushed up with him, mostly in hand technique, because that's what gets him the penalties, but I mean, like, apart from, like, I just think when I look at that, I just think you can coach that, you can figure that out. I can't coach longer arms.
Yeah. Like, that's fair. And, like, I wasn't trying to avoid the question, and you asked me what it is about Jackson Powers. For me, the things I like, he's athletic. He's powerful. Mm-hmm. He's strong at the point of the attack, which is what you want. Because if you look at our previous centre, Tyler Biadasz could get pushed about a little bit. And I never liked that about him. There was just a little bit of softness in him. I just didn't feel he was a nasty player, which is what you want your center to be. It's also what you want your guards to be. There wasn't, I suppose, that bit of a dog in Tyler Biadasz. But you bring in Jackson Powers Johnson, you add him to this offensive line, you stick him beside Zach Martin, and Zach Martin is going to turn to that guy and go, you go to work, you do your thing. That's what I like about him. What I don't like is he's slightly short. Again, he's 6'3" and 328 is what I'm seeing in terms of his weight. That might be a little bit out of balance. And as you say, that leads to penalties. It leads to issues with hand technique in terms of getting outside guys, which you don't want your center to do. You want to keep the arms and the hands in on the chest. And he doesn't seem to do that as much, which, as you say, leads to penalty issues for me. And then the other concern is there's a bit of missing quickness. There's not that initial snap you want, you know, especially if he's going to be snapping the ball. You know, he's obviously going to be 1-2 snap and then reacting. And he hasn't shown, because he's played most of his career at guard, he hasn't shown that burst off the line, which you want. If you're putting him in as a center, you're kind of going, okay, guys, you could see this on college film. He wasn't the quickest guy. And now we're putting him in a position where he has to react quicker. And that's a concern for me. If you bring in Jackson Powers Johnson and you go, you're playing guard, you can teach that bit of quickness. But if he's snapping the ball, it's a concern for me.
All right. No, that's fair. I like that. Yeah. There is obviously as well, you know, the only red flag is a medical thing, but
yeah,
I mean, like, people are making a song and a dance about it, but from what I've heard,
yeah,
teams aren't really paying that much attention to it.
Yeah,
you know, like, like, we can all speculate. We don't see, you know, we say this many times, we don't see the medical reports. We're not there at the combine when they're getting them.
Yeah.
So you just have to go off what you see and what you know. And what we see and what we know is there doesn't seem to be anything standing out with it. Teams seem fine with it.
Yeah.
You know, that's about as far as you can really report on it. Because you just got to go with what the mood is, what people are saying, and that's all I can really say on it. So it's not a knock in that sense, but go on.
No, I was going to say, because that was the thing that kind of came out. It came out last Tuesday night, I think, and I saw a few tweets, and, you know, from guys that we know in the US
that are,
you know, guys that we've had on the show, and they were kind of mentioning it, and then I couldn't find the information on Wednesday morning. So if there is something there, this will be something you'll hear about across the next couple of weeks. If you see him start sliding, that's something that you will need to watch out for. And it's going, okay, we've seen him slide. Now we know why. There's something, there's a medical issue there.
Yeah.
But we're not saying there is an issue. As far as we're aware, there isn't. So, you know, it's definitely game on for Jackson Powers Johnson. And there have been a couple of messages here, so I'm gonna pop them up now whilst we can. And our own Jamie the Godfather is saying, if the Cowboys don't come away from the draft with an offensive tackle and a center, would you consider it a disappointing draft? And then Paul has said, we could drop back a few spots, get Zach Frazier and pick up more bodies in day two. And I think there's also a couple of comments kind of saying, Joe's saying, I draft an offensive lineman in the first round unless this player Dallas has on their board, they can't pass up. And DJ Dog is saying 24th spot should be somewhere there's an offensive line for that's going to help us. The quarterback's going to push players down. So, I mean, in terms of what's in there, I mean, we're going to talk about Zach Frazier in a few minutes. I don't think Zach Frazier is someone you're going to drop back a few spots and try and pick him up. Zach Frazier is definitely someone you're going to try and pick up in the second round.
Yes, I agree. Me and Paul did mock drafts, and I was lucky enough to land. to land him. I don't think you're going to get Frazier in the, you know, you can't, you're going to get Frazier if you wanted to in the first round, but I don't think it would be a wise choice to take him in the first round. Like, to number of reasons. Like, one, is he a first round talent? No. Does the position require it? No. Because, like, it's very often you get inside offensive linemen, especially centers, drafted in the first round. I know Travis Frederick, you know, I know that's what people are going to say straight away. Yes, it does work out sometimes, especially when you draft out of position, and the Cowboys are renowned for drafting offensive linemen out of position in terms of draft. But I just think with everything that's going on, like, put it this way, which sounds better? If you wanted to go offensive lineman back-to-back, so a tackle and center combo, does Jackson Powers Johnson with Patrick Paul, does that sound better than, say, than Frazier
and Mims?
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. That, like, that way round sounds better to me.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's your draft sequence.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And I know Paul put it in, and I'm pretty sure someone else did put it in. Jackson Powers Johnson was someone the Cowboys met with at the draft, or at the combine. I believe he's also been invited in for a 30 visit.
Which one? Say that again.
JPJ.
Ooh,
I think he's been invited for a 30 visit.
If he has, that would be interesting.
Yeah. So again, it's that thing we've been trying to say for the last number of weeks. Watch guys that have been senior or Shrine Bowl. Watch guys that have been interviewed at the combine. watch guys who are being invited as a formal 30 visit and watch guys that are Dallas Day or Texas Day guys. So they're definitely people to keep an eye on. But look, let's move along and talk about the second guy that we've already forewarned people in terms of Zach Frazier from West Virginia. Zach Frazier's a fun guy.
Yeah. So obviously we've kind of had to miss out a little bit on Frazier because literally the last game of the season, their bowl game, he got injured, leg injury. Trying to remember, did he break a shin bone?
Yeah.
I believe. I could be wrong, I could be right. I'm sure somebody will check it up. I believe that's correct. So in terms of like the pre-draft process, we kind of missed a little bit of it. But I'm a huge fan of Frazier. Like there's a lot to like with Frazier. Obviously, there are red flags there. So, kind of with Jackson Powell Johnson and Frazier, there is that. His is just a little bit more recent, and you kind of the reason why you've got to lower him down over JPJ is because of that, especially. That's one big reason. The big reason, though, in comparison, is that Frazier, because of his size, will tend to sometimes he will want to lunge and bend at the waist. You see that quite a bit. It's because he lacks power. He just lacks physical power in comparison to Johnson. So you see that a lot. And there's this odd habit he has. When he snaps the ball, he stays looking at the floor. And I don't know what that is about. It confuses me that, you know, like snap the ball and look up, find out where the guys are coming from, start reading the defense, find out where the rush is coming from, who's moving in what direction. But he snaps the ball and he keeps his eyes staring down at the floor for a small period of time.
Yeah.
And I don't know why people haven't picked him up on it already. It's really weird. And you watch it and it's quite strange, but apart from that, because like that, I feel is coachable. Somebody can coach that out of him quite easily. I don't know why they haven't already, but there we go. Everything else is brilliant. Now you want to talk about, you know, Jackson Powers Johnson lacking in speed and burst. Frazier does not lack in speed and burst. I mean, this guy is. He's got speed, athleticism, agility. He's got it all. He is a very, very athletic center. You see as well with the speed, you see how quickly he can move his feet, moving across, moving sideways, mirroring just extremely easily. But here's the bit I like most about Frazier. And I've got it on one of my videos on Twitter. Is you watch him combo block and he hits strikes. He bounces off the defender and moves straight into the second level, taking another two guys out. That's what Frazier is good at. Because of his speed and how intelligent he is as well at reading it all. Because like his pre-snap read and his post-snap reads are fantastic at dissecting the defense. But you see him on the combo blocks and moving into the second level. That is where he's at his best in terms of the run defense. It's fantastic to watch. And he does it like that. What he does now in terms of that technique is already at an NFL level. He's already doing it. The other thing that I see with Frazier more than Jackson Powers is being the leader, being the quarterback of the offensive line. Because he's able to read and understand the defense. You see him. He's standing there. You know, we used to see it with Travis Frederick. I know I'm going back there again. Yeah. Dennis Rajek, he's there. He's calling all the adjustments. He's pointing guys mm-hmm. out. He's letting his fellow offensive linemen know.
Yeah.
The quarterback makes a audible. He's in there. He understands it. You can see he's reading it. He's making his adjustments based off that.
Yeah.
You see that happening a lot more snappier, a lot more quicker, and with better understanding than you do with Jackson Powers. So yeah. That is one plus. So it's more the speed and athleticism and between mm-hmm. the ears in comparison to Jackson Powers.
Yeah.
But he isn't as good by far in terms of pass blocking.
Yeah.
To Jackson Powers. Like,
yeah.
Powers' pass blocking is better than Frazier's pass blocking by a country mile.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the run blocking, although they're very, very different types of run blockers, I would say they're fairly closer to each other.
Yeah.
But again, this is a guy as well that has struggled in the past with discipline.
Yeah. Like what I like about Zach Frazier, and this is something that you want coming into the NFL, he's not scheme specific.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy you can bring in. He can block, he can pull, he can be a snowplow into the second level. As you kind of said, on his combo blocks, he's pushed the guy off, he's moving into the next level and pushing guys out of his way. Mm-hmm. He's a leader, as you say, he can call at the line. Oh, which yeah. is something we didn't see enough of from Tyler Biadasz. And that's pretty much why I think they let Tyler go, was he was just too quiet within that offense. And what you want from your center coming in is going, right, I'm here. I'm the guy. It's up to me. Who's going to turn around and go, right, Zach Martin, you're an all-pro, but I'm still going to call things out to you. I'm going to make sure you know what you're supposed to be doing. It's an yeah. attitude. He's also a former wrestler.
Yes,
correct. I think he was an all-state champion in high school. So again, four times. Yeah. So he has that ability. He has that IQ. He knows how to use leverage. He knows how to use technique. He can use it against defensive linemen. So there is a lot there. And like I do agree with you in terms of Jackson Powers Johnson being a better pass blocker. I'm not trying to say Powers Johnson is a worse player. The concern for me with Powers Johnson is he wouldn't have played center, whereas Frazier has played center a lot and knows, as you say, how to call the schemes that you want. But again, I wouldn't take Frazier in the first. If I'm taking Frazier, I'm taking him in the second. And I think he has that ability like Creed Humphrey. I think he came out 2-3 years ago. You're going, it's not a guy that you're looking for, but it's a guy who has that high IQ.
Yeah, he's definitely high IQ. Very, very much. And like you say, the wrestling background, that's impressive too. You know, because you do see the wrestling background. I'm trying to remember the game. I think it was against Texas Tech. And you see it. You see him using the other players, the defenders' momentum against them in order to trap them into some sort of movement where Frazier can then roll them up. It is fun to watch with him. You know, you do see that. I'm pretty certain the Texas Tech game, if I remember, well, I'm trying to remember which games I've watched on him, and I'm pretty certain it was the Texas Tech, and you see I might be wrong. I might be thinking of a different player.
Yeah. But, I mean, in terms of, as you say, the knocks on Zach Frazier, very obviously, look, there's an injury there coming in. Again, the hips, they're a little bit tight. He needs to develop that hip movement. And sometimes that's just something you can't teach. Someone having flexible and loose hips, they either have it or they don't. Again, as you say, he tends to lurch forward on blocks. He can get off balance. And again, that's not something you want to see from your center. You want to have him rock solid as an anchor and be, you know, he's literally out position and moving, and you don't want him falling forward.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. But I like him. Like, if the Cowboys draft him, I will be extremely happy. If they draft him in the first round, I would find that weird. But I've said this before, that the Cowboys have done this so often now that if they did do it, I'd be like, so there's a plan. Yeah. You guys seem to know, okay, albeit the second round is a complete mess. But when it comes to drafting first round offensive linemen, you have my respect.
Yeah.
That's how I put it.
For sure. Just before we move on, there is a great little going on here on the YouTube site. And just for anyone who's watching us on Twitter, can you maybe check in on our YouTube site, because we can't see any comments coming in from you. We love to have the interaction with people. So if you can get us on YouTube, it's definitely worth your while. And, you know, so I believe it's DJ Dog is saying Jerry Rice's son said he'd love to play in Dallas. Joe is saying, I don't like him. He's nothing like his father. And believes we have better receivers in our practice squad. And DJ Dog is then saying, I'd like to see a bit more of Jalen Brooks this year at wide receiver. And I think Jalen Brooks is someone who's going to get he's going to get that fourth, fifth spot. With Gallup having moved on, Jalen Tolbert is your de facto number three.
I mean, you wonder what they're going to do with wide receiver, because obviously that is a need now. So they've got to do something. What they do is anyone's guess. whether they do it through free agency or in the draft, I don't know. But they have to do something.
Yeah. Joe is also reminding me, don't forget Turbo Turpin. I'm not sure. I don't know how to answer that question.
Yeah. Maybe
we'll see some more of them.
with Turpin, he is good. Don't get me wrong. He provides something that's a lot different. Yeah. But I just see him as more of a gadget player.
Yeah, that's all I see him as. I just don't think. I mean, I think if they turned around and came out of this draft with someone who could return kicks and punts, I think that they'd kind of happily move on from Turpin at this point.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. Yeah, because like they kind of tried to do this before with some guys, and then they just kind of move on from it. So I just wonder if that's going to be the same thing again, perhaps. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
But I do like Turpin. I think he's great. You know, kind of had a tough run of it last year, but he did have moments of glory. And the thing is people will complain about Turpin, you know, and say like, oh well, look at the punt returns and all the rest of it. Let's not forget that Turpin did make some very, very big returns. He even returned one for a touchdown.
Yeah.
But it all got called back because of flags. And that happened a few times. And I even made comments at the time on Twitter, like, don't forget this when it comes to the end of the year, you know?
Yeah. So we're going to move on to the next guy. And look, DJ Dog has kind of put it in here. He's kind of read our minds a little bit. And a few people have mentioned Graham Barton. Like, again, Graham Barton is someone the Cowboys have interviewed. Definitely keep an eye out on him. If they drop back in the first round, there's definitely some kind of interest in Graham Barton. But Cooper Beebe is a guy who has kind of steadily sat in the top 100, maybe top 75 players. Hasn't gone any higher, but hasn't gone any lower at any point either. You know, he's kind of consistently been there. Bottom of the second, top of the third.
Yes. Yeah. And this is, again, a guy who was All-American last year. Mm-hmm. Like, that stands for something. That tells you all you need to know, right? So, You're all American. You're that instantly means you're one of the best players in the country last year. So
yeah,
I think with Cooper Beebe, I've got his score up now that I've given him, and he's not wildly athletic, but
yeah,
as a pass blocker, woohoo! I like this guy is almost off near a perfect score for me in terms of pass blocking. Just a couple of different things why he didn't get it, which we'll get into. But this guy, I mean, the grip strength and the arm strength, the upper body strength, just insane. And when you look at this guy, you know, you want your inside interior offensive lineman to look like fire hydrants, and this guy literally does. do you know what I mean? But
yeah.
Although he's very, very good, he's a hulking guy. You know, he's just he's like nearly 340 pounds, which is big. But he's still he can move.
He shows.
Yeah, no. And in terms of pass protection, you know, so this is why he hasn't got a perfect score for me. Although he's very good in pass protection, and he'll move his feet and he'll keep everything there. He does have a slight issue with lunging, where he will push forward when just really he didn't need to. But when it comes to that, when you see how he understands the movement of the defenders and how they're moving and adjusting, you can see how he's adjusting with them. And this is, as I say, a guy who isn't completely fast by any stretch, but he will still go and get you combo blocks on the move. And when that guy gets moving and he gets up to speed, you are not stopping him. And if I was a linebacker seeing that guy come towards me, I'm just going down to the ground. I'm just going to lay on the ground and give up.
Yeah.
Because you're just not going to stop anything there. And so, and like I say, his big issues comes with lunging. And it kind of seems to be, I wonder if his size causes him sometimes to be, I'm not sure if this is the case. I need to speak to somebody about this. But it's just a theory I had in my mind when I first watched him a few months back. But one of the things I thought of is, what if it's his size and the way he's built causes him to sometimes be off balance, and that's what causes him to lunge? I'm not sure if that's the case. That could be a thing. I'd have to find that out. But that's how it looks sometimes on tape.
Yeah. Like for me, this is probably going to sound a little bit contradictory with him. He has an awesome base. You know, he sits down in his blocks. You're not going to knock that guy over very easily. As you say, if he gets moving, it's like a boulder going downhill.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing but trouble coming.
He's just like a bull. It's like a bull is what it reminds me of.
But the concern with him is it's his feet. He doesn't have that lateral movement.
Okay.
And his feet, he gets a bit happy feet, I suppose, is the way to put it. You know, in that, you know, he's dancing a little bit rather than actually going, okay, I need to be going forward.
Yeah. I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
So, like the wasted movement from the feet.
Yeah. That's it.
I can see that. Yeah. I mean, though, like generally, I like Cooper Beebe. I've never got the chance to draft him in any mocks because he's always gone by the time I'm ready to look in his direction. I like a lot. I mean, he's going to have some work done on his run blocking.
Yeah.
Mostly because of the out of balance. Maybe perhaps it's the size with the feet thing, is why he does it. I mean, like the pass protection, if he didn't lunge, I'd be like, this guy is perfect. That's a perfect score. I do like everything. The only thing he really lacks, which is where it comes down with run blocking, he lacks the aggression on it. So he kind of like you look at it sometimes and think, God, is he lacking like some power? And you're like, no, he does have the power because we've seen it. We see that he has the upper body strength. It is there. So it has to be something else. And I think it's just a lack of aggressive demeanor when it comes to unblocking. And once he gets it, I think he'd be a fantastic offense lineman. All of that, though, saying is that everything there is completely teachable. It's completely coachable, especially at an NFL level. So to me, it's like you have a very, very high ceiling for this guy and the floor isn't that low. And to bring that floor up is fairly simple.
Yeah. Like the only concern, and look, this isn't a concern really, it's you've kind of flagged it, is that you're not taking this guy in the second round, but he's more than likely gone by the time you get to your third round pick as it stands.
Yeah. And that literally happens every time. When I do a mock draft, you know, you think, I could, but is 56 a bit rich for a guy like Cooper Beebe?
Yeah.
And I say yes. So you go, okay, let's wait for it to wheel around. Never makes it back around. Never does. And that's how, and generally these mock simulators can be a little bit out of whack with reality. But I think with that one, I genuinely see that being as quite correct.
Yeah. And this is the thing, like I've actually not done very many mock drafts. Like I used to, I know someone said it here earlier, they must renew their subscription to Fanspeak. I've actually done very few drafts on Fanspeak this year. But like that, I'm trying to be a bit more realistic in drafts that I'm doing. And the thing with Cooper Beebe is I don't think they interviewed him at the Combine.
No, I can check. Hold on. Yeah. If you keep talking, I'll let you know.
Yeah. You know, so again, it's that thing of watching out for early signs and flags that the Cowboys, as Mike says, you know, what kind of boxes have they ticked? Have to tick the senior shrine bowl, have to tick the interview, have to tick the invite.
Yeah.
But the one thing we do say with Cooper Beebe is, you know, he's a high IQ player. He's played left guard, but he's also played left tackle. He has, you know, he has that dreaded term, position flex.
Yeah, and that is a plus. And another plus as well is there's not really that many red flags on his resume in terms of off-field injuries and all the rest of it. So that's another plus. But I'm just... It would, wouldn't it? Yeah. Just as I get to the Cowboys to have a look to see if all their... to see who they interviewed in... here we go. Right. So who did they interview on the offensive line? No Cooper Beebe on there.
Yeah, I didn't think they had. I think they'd gone quite short in terms of their interior offensive interviews. Austin, great to have you along. I'm not going to pull up your second comment, but it is quite funny. He says, we're going to need 30 picks to fix all the holes we've got. Look, I think the one thing to be watched or to be wary of over the next couple of weeks is Dallas will fill out the roster. They will fill the holes that are needed and then approach the draft with the, you know, we can draft best player available. We don't have to draft for need. So they will pick up, guys. Don't worry about that. But anything else on Cooper Beebe, Mike?
No, I think we pretty much covered it there.
Grand. So if we want to move on to the next guy, it's a guy who's kind of flying under the radar an awful lot. Again, a guy who's highly rated by many. And, you know, if you're looking for pure guards, probably is the highest rated pure guard in the draft. And that is Christian Haynes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So I have two sides of when it comes to Haynes, right?
Yeah.
Fantastic senior bowl, first of all, right? Senior bowl. Yeah. Guy smashed it out of the park, right? My issue is he is primarily a right guard. And when it comes to the right guard position for the Dallas Cowboys, it's fairly well filled. Well, for this year. But on the flip side of that, when they drafted Tyron Smith, Tyron Smith was primarily a right tackle. Yep. So I've had this discussion. I've had it with Jay Tuck as well. That, although, you know, there are plenty of, especially in today's college football, enough talent there for these guys, and they practice it as well. I know there's a few teams. I'm not sure if UConn does, but there's a few teams that will flip their offensive line. They'll flip them around. So the guys on the right will play the left, the guys on the left will play the right, purely because just to cover themselves for injury. So it's best that these guys know how to play each position.
Yeah.
If or when the time comes. Now, for me, I think Christian Haynes falls into the category of, if the Cowboys draft him, they have a plan for him. If they put him into left guard and kick Smith out to tackle, like, although people get one of the things that will come up, one of the conversations is, yeah, but isn't Haynes a right guard? And you could be like, no, yeah, true. But we've drafted players to play an opposite side before, and it's worked out. It's worked out tremendously to the point where we've had multiple Pro Bowl players, fringe Hall of Fame type guys. So it's worked. So that's the first thing I say about Christian Haynes. The other thing I'll say is he's I wonder if he's quite scheme specific. Because he's got these very, what's the word I'm looking for? He's got these athletical, physical traits. But I wonder, because of the style that he plays, if he's going to be best suited to the zone, to a zone blocking scheme.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely a zone blocking guy.
Yeah. I just wonder, because of the way, just the style of his play when you watch it, and UConn as well, you know?
Yeah.
So what happens is, if you're going to try and get him to play power, or you know, try and drift away from a zone scheme, you're going to limit really what he is. And and that's the big problem. Length is an issue, because that's huge. He's not going to move guys inside. And I just wonder if you're not playing him in a zone blocking scheme, you're going to he's going to have to resort a lot of times to that swinging door technique that they sometimes use. And I wonder then, that might be fine in the rookie year, but going forward, people will pick up straight away what you're doing.
Yeah.
So that's how I worry about Haynes. Apart from that, I mean, like, as I mentioned, you know, he's a physical guy. He's athletic, fantastic. You watch him in the Senior Bowl, he didn't take any crap off anyone. He was aggressive. He was, and you know, when you come from the University of Connecticut, you're kind of seen as a lesser football type quality. He didn't let that affect him. And the Senior Bowl is a good place to see these guys who are lower down, if they can hang with the guys who are higher up. And Haynes did. He did do that. He did. He stuck with it. And he was up against some particularly very tricky defenders who can layer different pass rush moves on you. And he was able to do it. Sustaining blocks is one of his big things. When he gets his hands on you and he grips onto you, that's it. The game is over. He will sustain those blocks at a very, very high level in pass protection. You also see, because they kind of have to, they resort to it a lot in UConn. UConn is using him on pulls. That's done a lot. So you see the movement, the flow, and in terms of the run game, although the technique isn't there, he will keep going and he will finish that play all the way to the end. That's what I do like with Haynes. I do enjoy watching him on that front.
Yeah. I mean, the concern for me, and look, you've kind of flagged it already, the short arms, 33.5 inches, that limits him exclusively. He is an interior guy.
Mm-hmm.
this is also a guy who you could consider, and I know you're going to probably laugh at me when I say this, he could move to centre.
I mean, I don't know what his experience is like in terms of that. Yeah. You would like to think that they would have done some of that with him, perhaps, in college. Yeah. But, I mean, like, you know, it could work. Like, you'd have to see what he was like at snapping the ball. I haven't seen it, so I wouldn't like to comment there.
Yeah.
So until you see it, you know, you don't know. But it has worked. That is something else that has worked out in the NFL before.
Yeah. I mean, our own Travis Frederick was a left tackle at Wisconsin. And someone goes, hey, let's get this guy to snap a ball.
There you are, see.
You know, it has happened. But, I mean, the other thing with Haynes is he's definitely going to be he's more scheme specific than a Cooper Beebe or a Zach Frazier, in that you're going to have to put him in a pass first offense really to get the best out of this guy. If you're looking to be a team that's a run first, he's not going to be the guy for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Like I say, it's the technique as well as the reach that is the issue.
Yeah.
When it's not through a lack of trying that you see with him, that when he gets onto them, mm-hmm. and he's trying to be aggressive and push forward, you can see he is trying. It's not that's the problem. Yeah. The issue is more of just the technique. It's just lacking a lot of fundamentals.
Yeah, absolutely. So anything else on Christian Haynes before we move on to our final guy of the night?
No, I mean, like, if the Cowboys draft him in the second round, again, that's like a guy to me where you go, okay, and then you understand what they're doing. You just be like, this is either Zach Martin's replacement, because Zach Martin is more than likely going to retire next year, or this is pushing Tyler Smith out to left tackle.
Yeah. And it is something to watch for literally every player we've talked about tonight. Is bar Jackson Powers Johnson, there is going to be a plan if they're bringing that player in mind.
Yeah.
But
the only one where, like, most of these guys, when they draft, you can be pretty much like, ah, I get it. The only one where I cannot say that would be Graham Barton, because Graham Barton can play so many different positions. Versatility is his greatest strength. If they drafted him, I'd be like, I have no clue what the plan is right now.
And, like, to be fair, if it ends up the Cowboys drop back 5, 6, 7 slots in the first round, definitely watch out. Tyler Guyton, Jordan Morgan, or Graham Barton are going to be the names that are going to be still on the board and available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the final guy we're going to talk about, and for me, there's a lot of parallels for this guy with our now departed center in Tyler Biadasz. A year ago, this guy would have been a first round draft pick. On any of the very first sets of draft boards for 2024, this guy was the number one center in the class. Come post Senior Bowl, post Combine, Dane Brugler reckons this guy is a fourth round draft pick.
Yep.
And it's Cedric Van Praan out of Georgia.
Yes. So first of all, right? So as you say, decorated. This year's Jacobs Blocking Trophy Award, which is given to the best offensive lineman in the SEC. So already, I know you're not a fan of it, but it is something you have to pay attention to. That offensive lineman in the SEC, if you perform well, you already straight away get a tick in the box. If you win an award, if you're like on the all SEC first team, like Van Praan was, you're already grabbed my attention. That's it. First thing straight away. Offensive, defensive lineman in the SEC, always something to really pay attention to. Like you say, you know, so he was touted very highly, goes to Georgia, hoping to three-peat the national championship. Yeah. But what you saw last year was the limitations of his blocking. The limitations come in the form of his range, of his reach.
Yeah.
There's an issue with that and an issue with how he's able to mirror. They're the big first two problems straight out the way. The other problem is we mentioned earlier about with Christian Haynes and his versatility that he's best suited to his own blocking scheme. Well, yeah. Van Pran really, really is. I mean, that's we're talking about Georgie. Everything is predicated on what they do on the offensive line. Yeah. So you look at Pran and you say, excellent. And there's this high IQ of...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, more than like any of the offensive linemen in this year's draft. Instinctually, he's right there. He understands what's coming seven moves before it's about to happen. He really, really is a very, very intelligent player. Zero reaction to twists and stunts. This guy, he just seems to have a complete, like almost like as if he has a magic ball and you can see it coming.
Yeah.
He's got that. And in terms of the run game, very, very well balanced. And he has that aggressive, you know, we talked earlier about players without the aggressive demeanor. This guy, Van Pran, has the aggressive demeanor, very, very good in that way. But in terms of his run blocking, it does need to improve. This is the trouble, and that the issue with it is his range and his arm length. It just is. And what is weird to watch is, I don't know why, but just go on YouTube and watch Van Pran. When he's moving side to side, he just looks uncoordinated and it just doesn't look natural in his movements. They look clunky and as if he's forcing himself to do it. I'm not saying that it causes issues in terms of his protection, but it's just very, very strange to watch when you watch these movement skills moving side to side. It's really odd to watch.
He reminds me of a drunken guy taking both sides of the path on the way home at night. Or a bit like the Oompa Loompas in the first Willy Wonka. It's just kind of like this.
It's an odd movement. It hasn't. The one thing they always say to you is, well, did it hinder him college? No, it didn't, right? Not in that sense. Yeah. I'm wondering if some of the things, because of the way he moves, did cause an issue, like in pass protection. But what I'm saying is that, okay, so you've got this odd, clunky movement skill. How would that affect you once you get to the NFL, where things are sharper, where, you know, the screws turn a little bit tighter and you need to make sure that technique is everything? That's what I try and think of, and that's how I'm thinking of it. Yeah, it didn't affect him in college to a high degree. There are other things at play why his pass protection causes problems. But I just wonder how will that affect him once he gets into the NFL? But I think really the main reason for why why he got dropped to the fourth round, it has to be that it's the mirroring issues, which can kind I the mirroring issues aren't down to his weird way he moves. It's hard to explain. I think it's just a lack of quickness in that sense.
Yeah. Like for me, like he's very much, he's a high IQ guy. He's a team leader, as we say. Yeah. So he has the IQ, but with us, it just seems to be something about his brain and his feet just don't seem to be in unison in terms of what he's doing. As you say, it's that rocking motion. He doesn't mirror his feet don't seem to have that, I suppose, lateral movement in them. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you're imagining him dancing and it's literally going shoulder to shoulder, side to side. You know, it's not There's no grace or flow or movement. And I'm doing this here like this. I'm a terrible dancer. But, you know, that's kind of what you want to see, is that, you know, if the defensive tackle is lined up over him, is he going to see the guy, and then is he going to move with them? Mm. You know, that he can kind of go, right, okay, you're trying to come this way, and I'm going to move with you. You know, it's like he doesn't seem to know how to dance, yeah. If that makes sense.
I mean, like, the big one for me, the reason why I say he needs his own blocking scheme, it's the length, yeah, the reach, and the lack of quickness in, yeah, his mobility. That's why he needs the zones up blocking scheme. So, yeah, if he's on an island in, say, like gap power, yeah, I just think that he's going to get churned over quite easily, you know, yeah, because there's guys that are going to edge around him. And I just, yeah, worry how that would affect what happens, how he's utilized going forward on an NFL, yeah, roster.
Yeah. And I mean, as you say, look, he is a bit more scheme specific, and, you know, like a lot of his technique, it's very inconsistent, and you don't want to see that at this stage. Mm-hmm. You're kind of going, right, as you've alluded to, if he's coming out of Georgia, an almost 3-time national champion, you would hope that he's that bit more polished, that you're going, right, I'm putting this guy in, as I say, putting between Zach Martin and Tyler Smith.
Yeah.
Can I rely on him? Which is what we thought we were getting, or we hoped we were getting with Tyler Biadasz, and never truly did. That you're kind of looking and going, right, I have to worry about what my center's going to do. And then once he snapped the ball, as you say, he has 30, I think it's 31 and a half inch arms. That's trouble. That's trouble, yeah, straight away.
That is very, very short. You know, we talked about Tyler Linderbaum earlier, and his thing against him was short arms. I don't even think that,
yeah,
his were that short, you know?
Yeah. For some reason, I think they might have been about 32 and a quarter, 32 and, mm-hmm, a half.
Yeah.
Can't remember exactly, but I think that's a fair call, what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, like, if you can mask his deficiencies in that way, which, mm-hmm, you certainly can on the zone blocking scheme, then I think he has a chance to make it to a Pro Bowl, because then, not in his rookie year, but maybe within his rookie contract within the first, yeah, 5 years or 4 years. Yeah. So it's quite possible. There is a way, because there is a great foundation with him to work from.
Yeah. I mean, if you get to the fourth round and they haven't addressed the offensive line at all, I don't think Cedric Van Pran is going to be a pen throw.
No, definitely not.
You know, it's definitely something you could do. Just for anyone that's watching along and can't see this, so Joe was saying, looks like we're going to lose Stephon Gilmore. He's having a meeting with the Carolina Panthers. For me, that can only be about one thing. It's money.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, there was whispers I heard over the weekend or before the weekend that he was talking with the Patriots again.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, like, what, the return.
They have about $50 million still available.
Yeah.
They have a lot of money. And I mean, look, let's be honest. We have an all pro coming back off an injury. We have an all pro in the secondary already. You know, I would definitely like to see Stephon Gilmore back here next season. But if he's not, look, it's definitely going to be a case of it's about the money.
Oh yeah, definitely, without a doubt.
Yeah. Well, look, I think we've kind of gone through the prospects at this stage, Mike. So what is in store for people when they tune in on Thursday night to watch yourself, Paul, and the team?
We are going to talk about day 3 of the draft. So we did day 2 last week, talked over a few things, the news. So we'll go over the news as well, yeah, things Jerry said over the course of the last week. That fills up like an hour of the show on its own. So so that's the plan. That's the plan for Thursday.
Absolutely. And for anyone that is wanting to tune in, that is 9 o'clock here in the UK and Ireland. For the likes of Joe in Central Europe, that is 10 PM. And then we're talking 3 PM. They're an hour ahead, aren't they? Their clocks have gone forward already.
Yes, they have. So
it's weird. It's a weird thing. I think it's
for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah. So 9 PM GMT. Tune in, and Mike, Paul, and the guys will be along. But before we get out of here, as always, Mike, we've got to pay the bills and say hello to our good friend Barry.
Yeah, yeah. If you're going to a game this year, make sure you book it through Cowboys Experience. Find them on social media or their website. They have game day tickets, stadium tours, meet and greets, and anything you can think of that's Cowboys related. They will treat you like royalty. So make sure you go and check them out. And if you do book a package with them for next season, use the promo code UKCowboys. Tell them that we sent you, because then that way you'll get some free stuff.
You will. And I hear they're going to have a new offering next year, that instead of chocolate pudding, they're going to be offering Buckfast. All of them. So if Paul is still watching along, Paul is definitely effing and blinding me out of it. I'm definitely going to give Joe the last word with this one. Good night, guys. Dallas forever, Philly for never. Absolutely, Joe. It is a good night for me.
And a good night from him.
Good night, folks.